every time I post something, I get so many messages of people saying, thank you for posting that for this reason or the other. The deep post specifically, a mother sent me an Instagram message and said I had to look you up because I was so excited to see your post on Jeep. I own a Jeep. I have a gay son who recently came out and he's struggling with depression and suicide. And just seeing that meant so much to her and to him. And, you know, there are all of these messages of hate posted on there, which again is not surprising, but equally, there are all of these messages of support as well. And I think that it's hard, but you have to block out the hateful messages because, of course, they're going to exist. But what's so much more important is that these things are becoming more visible, coming to light, and all the people who feel so supported by seeing it.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Erica Robichaud, who describes herself as shaping the future of diversity and inclusion through technology. She's a certified diversity and inclusion leader and strategist, as well as a neurodiversity ERG lead. Welcome, Erica. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about your background. Where did you grow up? What were your early interests?
I grew up in South Louisiana. What's funny is when I tell people I grew up in Louisiana, the first thing they always say is, oh, so you grew up in the swamp. And I always come back and say, okay, first of all, Louisiana is a huge state. There's a lot to it. The swamp is like a very, very tiny part of Louisiana. Having said that, yes, I did grow up next to a swamp. So a very, very tiny, tiny little, not even blip on the map, called Cypress Island, Louisiana, outside of Lafayette. So very southern, very deep south. I was a church kid growing up, so spent a lot of time at church. I went to church school. We went to church on Sunday mornings, on Sunday nights, on Wednesday nights. So probably spent the majority of my life growing up in the church in some way. And I was also a huge, well, I love sports. I won't say I was a huge athlete because I wasn't necessarily the best athlete, but I had the most love for the game, I think.
Any particular sport that captured you at those age?
I played every sport imaginable. So I played volleyball, softball, basketball, soccer. When I got to high school, I was on the rowing team. So pretty much if it was a team sport, I played it.
It's interesting. I think we'll return to the fact that church played such a large role in your upbringing, because that may be relevant later on in terms of just your own coming out story, I suppose, and also maybe your framing that you came with, because it is certainly the first guest I've had that would have attended quite so frequently growing up. So that must form an impression. Going from your childhood then, what was your career journey? How did that look?
You know, what's funny about my career journey is if you look at it on paper, it looks crazy and super scattered. But I guess this is where the neurodiversity part of me comes out, because when I look at it, everything makes so much sense and everything fits together. So in college, I worked for a newspaper as a news photographer. After college, I actually went to a film program, got a certificate in film production. Later on in my career journey, I was really into virtual reality, extended reality, all the alternate forms of reality. So that's kind of how that tied in there. From there, I got into user experience, where I focused a lot on creating systems and processes. So designing systems and processes that worked better for humans. And also my other big area of focus was inclusive design, which is how I ultimately got into the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, because to me, it makes a lot of sense. If you are wanting people to feel included and a sense of belonging, then you have to design systems that make them feel that way. So that's how it all sort of ties together in the end.
And you're not the first on the series to talk about inclusive design. And again, one has to be kind of having a lived experience and experiencing, I suppose, what it's like not to have design include you and represent you in order to actually shape that. So I think it's key that it's coming from the users.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, especially as you can imagine, in South Louisiana, there were a lot of different types of non-inclusivity is not a word, but I'm making it a word. A lot of different groups that were not being included in different ways. So growing up and seeing that in the South, in the church, how all these different groups were affected, I think you're right, really did shape my career journey and where I am today.
Moving then, given this backdrop to your own coming out story, can you talk about that, the stage it happened, and I suppose the reaction to that in your professional and personal lives?
Wow. So I'm going to call it a coming out journey because I would say it really took probably 10, 15 years to go through the entire thing. I went in stages, I'll say, first to my close friends. I came out in college to my close friends, and then people started finding out more and more. Eventually was outed to my church first, and then was forced to tell my parents, which went about as you might think it did. So that was not a great time in my life. I also, in my early career, sort of had something that shaped me. The company I was working for at the time, the president of the company was an out lesbian. And I just found that so inspiring. And the owner and CEO of our company, his kids were in her wedding. So it was not just that she was out, but she was very, very out. And so I sent her an email. I was first coming out and still very timid about this, and sent her an email after gathering all of my courage to send this email to her, and she never responded. And that was a pretty clear message to me. Maybe she never even saw the email, but to me it was, yes, you can be out in the ways that I'm getting married. If you have kids, like, people can celebrate those ways, but like, we still don't talk about it. There was no mentorship, people to look up to. So I didn't actually start talking about being out in my professional career until, I would say, maybe 5 years ago, when I first worked for a company that focused on inclusivity. It was a UX consulting firm. They focused on inclusivity. And that was the first time I really, at 37, 38 years old, that I finally felt comfortable coming out professionally. And then there was a whole middle part to that with the church and my journey back to the church and being a really vocal about my journey and discovering my own personal feelings between my sexuality and religion and how they fit together, and really overcoming that voice in the back of my head that I had always been taught that you can't be gay and a Christian, and really figuring that out for myself and what that looked like. And then having this conversation with a lot of other gay Christians who, it turns out, there's a lot more of us than you think there are. So yeah, that was a really long answer, but a very long coming out journey.
Now, a journey, I think, is it the right word for it? Even in one's relationship with the church, many people have, that is a journey for them. It's a complex relationship. I'd love to, first of all, just probe. So you said you were outed by your church. What exactly does that mean? I mean, I think we all know what outed means, but what does that look like?
So particularly what happened for me was, I was at a Christmas Eve party, the big party that a member of our church threw every year, my family always went to. And I had just gone through my first lesbian breakup, so my little heart was broken. And the daughter of the hosts of the party was one of my close friends who I'd grown up with. So I was telling her this story about my recent heartbreak. And one of the kids who was at the party, unbeknownst to us, was eavesdropping on our conversation outside the door, ran down the stairs and announced to the entire party, which was pretty much all of the people that my family was closest to at this church, that I had dated a girl or whatever was said. So on Christmas Day, my cousin texted me and said, "Hey, my parents just sat me down and asked me if you were gay." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, what did you say?" And he said, "Well, of course I told them no. And they said they knew that I was lying. And if you don't tell your parents, that they're going to tell them. So either you can tell your parents or they will." But I mean, at this point, it had spread like wildfire through the prayer chain because, right, we don't gossip about people, we pray for them. So I had no choice but to tell my parents at that point because someone was going to inevitably tell them.
It sounds like the stuff, if you saw it on screen, you would say that's unbelievable. That's over the top melodrama. But the fact that it's real life is probably quite sobering. Speaking of drama, I want to move to some of the LinkedIn posts and social media posts that drew me to you, because some of them have gone viral. In particular, in my case, it was a LinkedIn post where you spoke about visibility. And then more recently, you've had a Jeep advert, which seemed to stoke some reactions. Can you talk a little bit about the reactions you got to that social media and what it taught you?
Yeah, you know, what's always incredibly interesting to me on LinkedIn is how free people feel to express openly their hate and vitriol. It's still shocking to me. And I don't know why I'm still surprised by this, because it happens so frequently, but it is still shocking to me, because my first thought is always, your boss could see this. So is this the kind of behavior acceptable at your workplace? And if so, then how do all of the other underrepresented groups feel? And what kind of toxic environment must you work in? And that's always my first thought. The Jeep post was on Instagram, which is less surprising. What I did find really interesting, again, not surprising, but interesting with the Jeep post, was they posted it on the Friday before Memorial Day. And there were so many people who were so angry that Jeep had posted a rainbow flag. It's not even June, they said. And they thought it was so un-American of Jeep to post a rainbow flag on Memorial Day, which really just blew my mind, because my partner of 3.5 years, she's a veteran and joined the military when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still a thing. So I think of all of these queer, trans, non-binary folks who are still actively serving and who have served, and how horrible it must feel to them to see these things being stated as if being an American and being gay are so diametrically opposed. And so I reshared that post on LinkedIn just with the message that visibility matters so much. Every time I post something, I get so many messages of people saying, thank you for posting that. For this reason or the other, the Jeep post specifically, a mother sent me an Instagram message and said I had to look you up because I was so excited to see your post on Jeep. I own a Jeep. I have a gay son who recently came out and he's struggling with depression and suicide. And just seeing that meant so much to her and to him. And, you know, there are all of these messages of hate posted on there, which again is not surprising, but equally there are all of these messages of support as well. And I think that it's hard, but you have to block out the hateful messages, because of course they're going to exist. But what's so much more important is that these things are becoming more visible, coming to light, and all the people who feel so supported by seeing it. That's really the message that I get overwhelmingly, is not, hey, I'm a member of the community and I'm so discouraged by all of the hate that I saw. It's always, I'm so encouraged by the visibility and by the messages of support.
And that was a beautiful, happy photograph of people in a hammock enjoying summer, as you would in a Memorial Day weekend. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but didn't say anything to me other than this is the beginning of summer and let's celebrate. So it was a great message. Love to talk then about in the professional setting. You've written about challenges that neurodiverse individuals face in the workplace. And clearly there's that intersectionality point as well. I think there is probably a greater than average intersectionality maybe between people who are neurodiverse and people who are LGBTQ+. What would you say that we've evolved in terms of some of the inclusion there around neurodiversity as well as LGBTQ+?
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually something that I was sort of unaware of until recently, that there actually is scientific evidence that there is so much of an overlap between the neurodiverse community and the queer women specifically, which I found pretty surprising and maybe kind of cool. Some of the overlap there is really that similarly to the queer community, I'll say queer so that I don't have to keep saying all the letters. Just know that when I say queer, I mean all of the letters and the plus. But there's been more and more visibility across the whole spectrum of the queer community within, I would say, even the last maybe like 5 or 10 years. And the same is true for the neurodiverse community. I think probably within the last few years, fewer than 5 years, people are really starting to talk about and acknowledge neurodiversity in a way that is not seen as negative or a disability. In our ERG, we talk about it as diversity. It's just another form of diversity. And I think what's interesting about that is that if you think about humans, everyone's brain is different, literally everyone. And I always think it's so funny, like at what point does your difference become different enough to where it matters? And so I think of it more as everybody has their strengths and everybody has their weaknesses. When we talk about sports, right? My best friend is 6'1" and she's a D1 college athlete and she won the College World Series at Baylor and her picture is on a giant flag and in the Baylor softball stadium. Like, she has a lot of things that I don't when it comes to sports. The same is true when it comes to neurodiversity in life and within a work setting. Right. So, yes, maybe I'm really scatterbrained and I'm not as good with focus or with being organized. But because my brain works that way, I can really see big pictures and I can see a lot of different perspectives and I can put everything together and see how everything works together. So every form of neurodiversity comes with its challenges as well, its incredible strengths. And it's so important to really understand that when you're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, is understanding those challenges and the strengths and how to create an environment that is welcoming and safe and healthy for everyone, whether your brain is quote unquote typical or atypical.
Well, it's definitely in terms of the frontiers. I think it is a new frontier in terms of integration and inclusion. And having a son on the, who is neurodiverse himself, it's too young yet for the workforce. It's clearly something I celebrate as well as, you know, seeing that, you know, really, as you said, the recognizing what everyone can bring to the table and how that cognitive diversity is just so key. Speaking about whether that type of inclusion or queer inclusion or LG, I'll go through the letters, LGBTQ plus inclusion. Are there any particular initiatives that you think are particularly effective? You mentioned visibility and you mentioned having a prominent gay boss being very important for you. Any other gestures or initiatives that you think make a particular impact?
I would say it's less about the big things and more about the little things for me personally. When I was speaking to someone recently who is also in the DEI space, and he was giving an example of something, and he mentioned seeing an attractive guy. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting that we're both in the DEI space. And if you've looked at my LinkedIn or any other forms of social media for more than 2 minutes, it's pretty clear that I'm a queer person. And yet the first thing that he thinks of is I'm attracted to men, just because it's so ingrained. And I don't hold that against him. I just think that being really intentional about starting to turn these things, even if it's little by little, and that's where visibility really comes in everywhere. I'll be honest, in that moment, I didn't correct him. I didn't say, actually, you know, I'm gay, I like women, or anything like that, because it didn't maybe necessarily feel necessary for the moment or the time. But really, who knows, maybe that was a missed opportunity for me to say, just throw it in there, because it is those little moments that strike me a lot more than the big things. I mean, yes, having Jeep post my picture with a gay flag and all my queer friends, like, that was very cool. And that means a lot. But also, it means a lot if you and I are talking and you don't know that I identify as queer, but you don't assume that I'm not.
I'd like to go back to some personal reflections now. So you've talked about having role models. Were there any particular key people who had influence in your career, maybe in a positive way?
I think the person who has influenced my professional journey the most is my dad. He was an amazing sales manager and leader my whole life. And so I guess what comes with that is that my whole life became a sales lesson, but also just a lesson. He always loved inspirational quotes, and so on. I do as well now. And just growing up around that was so shaping to me in a way that I don't think that I realized until I was older. And then, of course, in terms of journey and progression, of course, every time I think about a pivot or have to make a big decision, of course, I run it by him. But specifically in the case of maybe a queer or a neurodiverse role model, sadly, the answer is no. I never in my, I'm 39 now, and throughout my entire career, I never had that. And it's not until recently that I even started to meet people and have these types of conversations where it was like, wow, look how many of us there are. I had a conversation with someone the other day about starting something, maybe a group or discussion or a learning opportunity or something specifically for neurodiverse, female identifying LGBTQ plus people. And that it seems like that would be a very small sliver of the population, but turns out there are so many of us, enough of us, that I think that it'll be great to have a space for us. And I think it's really cool that people now are starting to be visible and starting to talk about it. But I talked about my very long coming out journey, and it wasn't always comfortable or something I necessarily wanted to do. But my motivation was always, you never had this. You never saw this. Think of how much it would have meant to you. And so I did it. I pushed past the uncomfortable nature of it because I wanted other people to see that there are more of us. And what's really funny, not funny, cool about it is it's like the snowball effect, right? I post something and then someone responds and says, me too. And then it just snowballs and all of these people connect and all of these people are talking about it and more people are posting about it on their pages and sharing their stories. So one single moment of visibility really can have such a rippling effect. And not that I think that I'm such an amazing person. I just think that even being willing to say it, at least right now, just that in and of itself means so much to people.
But are there any particular words of wisdom or quotes that you have now integrated as your creed or motto that you live by?
Yes, though I actually stole this poster from my dad that he had hanging in his office when I was a kid, and I now have it hanging in my room. It's a poster of Albert Einstein, and it has one of his quotes. And the quote is, great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds. And what that means to me now, I think, is different than what it used to mean to me, specifically in the context of the conversations that we've been having, that mediocre minds is not necessarily, to me, a put down of people who are lesser, but more people who are unwilling to be accepting of others who are different than themselves. That's kind of how I view that mediocre mind piece of it now. And the great spirit isn't necessarily a person who's so amazing, but really a person who is willing to be big and bold and loud and visible. And so that quote has definitely taken on a new meaning for me in the last maybe 5 years than it had earlier in my life.
Well, I can't imagine living with a sales guru and growing up. That must be some of the best possible indoctrination on the importance of sales and making connections and networks. Erica, I'll say that you are one living, breathing motivational quote. And I will say that that's how I came across you on LinkedIn. That's how I visualize you, is being visible and living your best life. And all I'll say is continue to do that and continue to raise the bar for visibility for queer folk everywhere. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I didn't even realize that our time was already up because I was just having so much fun.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice. And all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.